Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNC 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Rotatoes, how are you doing? I hope that you're having a wonderful time. I am back again with another message for you, which is to tell you that today you're getting something extra special, which we don't normally do on the public feed, and that is one of our arc barks. If you don't know what an arc bark is where we discuss the current arc, and we discuss the episode that we have just recorded and just done. It is a fun little behind-the-scenes peek about like how we were feeling about the episode, what's gone on, what was happening, what wasn't happening, etc. And it is a true blast, and I had a great time recording with these wonderful people. And so, yeah, we recorded a little arc bark. If you're wondering how arc barks are structured, I'll explain at the top of the episode, so don't worry. But the rules for the Arcus Barkus were, in fact, coined by the right and honourable Jacob Waisaki. So you need to stick around and check that out. And I think the Kickstarter will be just about still going as you're listening to this. So please, if you have just a half a second to go check it out, if you haven't already, it would mean the absolute world to us. And you will get your hands in what I think is going to be a really, what I think is a really epic system. It's fun, it's fast paced, it's pulpy, it's B-movie, it's learn it in half an hour. It's so great for your friends are coming over, you want a TTRPG to play, but you don't want to have to roll up character sheets, you don't have to go through the rigmarole of doing a big old, D&D Beyond thing and deleting characters in a D&D Beyond because you made too many characters and, you know, firing up the old encounter builder and it's difficult. So, forceofextinction.com, where you can check out the backer kit, check out all the cool tiers we've got, and maybe even come and play a game with me in a castle. I mean, if that sounds like fun to you, then please go ahead and check out backer kit. Forceofextinction.com is where you'll get all of the information. Without any further ado, however, let's go ahead and get into this week's Arc Bark, something that you can only exclusively get on the Rotating Heroes Patreon, and you'll get one for every single episode. So if this is fun and you enjoy this and you want some more of this, then make sure to check out the Patreon, where you'll also get a discount for the backer kit. Oh my gosh, it's just so much synergy. There's so much stuff going on. Can't believe I just said the word synergy. We're gonna forget that I ever said that. Okay, cool, bye. That's enough from me. Take it away past me. Back to the Rotating Heroes podcast, everybody. I am your GM, Jasper William Cartwright, and just at the top here, I want to say what an absolutely incredible time I had playing Force of Extinction. I'm so proud of this team, this wonderful group of people in front of me, the incredible Chad Pytel, Zachary Fortescom, and Elf Crook. Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you so much for all of your hard work on the game. Like, what a cool moment for us all.
Woohoo! Thank you. Yeah.
It was dope. It was really dope. So I just wanted to say at the top just how much I loved getting to play the game. I feel like every time I get to play the game, I'm sort of reminded of actually how fun it is. That fun little peek behind the screen, and Chad, you can attest to this. I want to say at every phase, we've kind of doubted ourselves in the sense that like we'll see people play it and we're like, hey, Chad, I think they're really having fun. Like, I don't think they're lying or anything. I think this game maybe is actually really cool and they really enjoy it.
I don't think they're lying. What a wild thing to say as you're looking at a group of people.
I think it really does strike a balance of like just enough structure to provide a framework for people to have a lot of fun. And then when you mix that with sort of just people who are fun to play with and fun, like it just comes together and strikes a really nice balance.
Yeah. And this was amazing just because I actually had been wanting to run other systems in Rotating Heroes. Just it feels kind of natural. Like it feels like something that should happen inside of the, you know, we're rotating the heroes all the time. And especially from arc to arc, we typically like, you know, especially in Amalara, used to sort of really change the style and tone of each arc quite a lot. So there'd be some arcs that were like, you know, a bit more like horror focused, a bit more that were like, you know,
one where there it was just wolves. They were playing wolves. That was an early on arc.
Yeah, they were just, Zach did a whole thing. That's a great arc. If anyone hasn't gone back and listened, Zach GM'd for Brennan and Izzy, and is it Matt Cordova? I can't remember. I think it's Matt Cordova. And they just played as a pack of wolves, and it's awesome. And I was so proud because I got to rework that moment in the... because basically the backstory that Zach had come up with was the wolves were looking after a particular character, and it turned out to be one of the other rotators. And I got to like bring that rotator back on and get her to see that moment. And it was like a really, really cool full circle thing, which I'm like very proud that we get to do on this show. It's like, it definitely is a mind fuck for me though. Like I was saying this about the other night that we just did an episode of the show, which is, oh man, I'm 2 episodes ahead of what that episode technically was. And so I was like, wait, what information do we know or don't we know? my brain.
Well, that was the nice thing about ours is that it takes place in the system, in the world, but it's disconnected from anything that it's
well,
on a
you
planet.
Say that, but it's not entirely.
Well, no, I just mean it's out of time. It's sort of like,
yes,
you know.
But there's some relevant info to like the current arc, right?
Well, yes, there's some very relevant info. And there was a lot of me being like, okay, what? So then when I've gone and done stuff recently, I'm like, what have I already told the audience? Because I'm now aware, I'm like, this audience might be getting this information 3 times. So I'm going to have to just rely on Ollie to be like, dude, you keep repeating yourself because you have a different group of people and you need to tell them that information. But no, thank you so much for joining. I loved our session. And even down to the character creation, I felt like everyone brought some lovely characters and some fun times. And I think, Zach, I'm going to hand out my first doggy treat. If you're not familiar with how the arc barks work, this was coined by the wonderful Jacob Waisaki, who basically said that in arc bark, you should give out doggy treats. And the opposite of a doggy treat is a PCFOC or a Pringles can full of coins.
Okay.
That is the opposite of a doggy treat because you shake a Pringles can full of coins at a dog and that's like a bad thing because I don't like the noise. So if there's anything if you have any regrets, anything you feel like you left on the table, you can also hand out a PCFOC. If there's anything you're like, oh man, I can't believe that happened. why didn't I roll better? But I'm going to hand out a doggy treat just because it felt like a natural progression, I think, having known you for a while, Zach, and actually got to play with you a shockingly little amount, honestly. It was just a nice natural progression for you to finally be blowing stuff up in one of my games. I was like, yeah, this tracks.
I'm really happy that I got to cause chaos and just come in. Because, like, the number of times that we have been adjacent to each other in actual play or in actual play where you've got to come in and just wreck house on stuff.
Yeah.
It felt like a wonderful flipping of the script to come in and be like, oh, cool, bet, I'm a wreck house.
Yeah. Zach, you've produced so many episodes of actual play, I feel like, that I've been in. And I'm like, why are we not playing together?
I know.
But yeah, no, you were blowing stuff up pretty immediately. And it turns out most of the problems in the settlement are kind of just, it's you, really.
Look, I do wonder to what extent maybe it's become a scapegoat situation where I fucked up so many times that it's like, well, if something goes wrong, the natural assumption is that it's Buddy's fault.
It was my favorite, though, when it transpired that a Buddy was the reason the skulls left in the first place. And
that was great.
And they took the skull as a like, well, we're taking this.
Yeah.
And then it became their whole thing.
It was everyone with really cool names that left.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot it was everyone with really cool names.
Yeah.
It was like all the cool people left the settlement. Yeah. And it was, you get to follow along with the non-cool people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Hey, do you know what's a great premise for a TTRPG? Like a, there's this program that everyone's going to sit and listen to. Yeah, we're going to follow the losers over here. Like, this really cool group of adventurers. Yeah, you could be following them, but you're not. You're hanging out with these dweebs.
Oh, I bet you the skulls aren't super fun. They just hang around in leather jackets.
Nah, they're just good. They're just good at stuff.
They're just really... Yeah, it's not fun to watch people be good at stuff. It's not like there's an entire genre around competence porn.
Oh, man. But yeah, I think this is my first time, I think, playing with you, Elle, right? Very first time. Wow, that's kind of wild. Well, I'm kind of, I'm both happy and, you know, sorry for throwing you into complete kind of lunacy so early on. Normally I let players, you know, have a couple sessions under their belt with me before I'm like, you know, letting loose with both cannons kind of thing. But you, I think you did a great job. And honestly, without you, I think these two Truggle Fox would have been in real trouble. Like, Pen came through.
We straight shoved you into the group mum role. We were like, no, Chad and I are going to be silly little guys. Someone has to pick up the slack.
Yeah, just an image of a halfling, just with a load of leashes with the chaos gremlins on the end of them being like, come on, children. No, it was really good fun. And there is something to be said about just being thrown into it. It was like, you get the vibes immediately. It was like, yep, okay, I know what we're doing here. Let's roll.
Absolutely. And I feel like that is kind of the nature of a Force of Extinction, right? Is that it's kind of designed to be something that you can just pick up and start playing really, really quickly. And what was actually really nice for me, and like, Chad, you might have a bit more experience of this than I do, but like, this was my first time kind of more with a mind to like long-term, long-term elements of this, because normally when I do that, it's like, it's just a one shot and there's kind of nothing else really to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Cause you've run it at a lot of conventions, which is just, yeah.
Yes. Conventions or just like one-offs for like groups who, mm-hmm. you know, are like helping us promote the system or something like that. Whereas this is the first time I've kind of weaved it into sort of like a larger thing. And actually, like, I was really surprised by how, I was like, oh yeah, this feels really comfortable actually in terms of like running it. The idea of running this for a longer term campaign, like you'd make a couple of adjustments, you know, in terms of the kinds of things that I think you throw at people on a regular basis. But like other than that, like it feels great. And I just love how quickly we can zip through stuff, like versus D&D where I'm like, okay, we got 17 checks to do and then, yep, let's do an issue. Like it really does come down to it where I'm like, I think on this show, I've done stretches of like six episodes without a single bit of combat. Like they've kind of fought stuff, but I'm just like, I just don't know if I want to do initiative, honestly.
I think the settlement provides a natural mechanism on which to like come back to and build stories off of. You don't need to base it around that, but that's like a natural thing. And the fact that you're, as I was rolling so many nat 20s and failing so much.
So many. Oh my God. It was like six or something insane.
We start to spend down the resources of the settlement. That naturally has consequences that you get to then either leave as a cliffhanger or pay off in the future.
See, I didn't actually really know that, like, as we're ticking down the resources, that there would be long-term consequence. It was only, like, when the numbers started getting low, you guys were like, oh, you guys are making some choices for the settlement. I was like, what? These aren't just numbers that I get to spend with no consequence? What?
These aren't just numbies on a page? What do you mean? What do you mean?
I was going to say, you said it's set up for long-term consequences. Didn't our episode end with monsters heading to the settlement? I think our part two would be the shortest part two in existence.
Well, that's partly a consequence of the lack of resources, because it is written into the Force of Extinction rules that, like, should your players drop below certain, like, a certain threshold or drop to zero even, you know, there is a consequence, you know, whether it be that, like, another settlement's like, hey, look, all their defenses are down, let's go get them. Or, you know, the monster smells all the food that's gone off or, you know, that kind of a thing. But Chad, I wanted to ask you, how did you feel getting to play it? Because I feel like you don't get to play as much as you GM this a lot.
That's true. It was a lot of fun to play, and
you rolled like shit, which was
I
funny.
Rolled like shit. I rolled so many nat 20s.
It was crazy.
It's nuts.
I punished you so hard because I was like, well, I. I have to honor these nat 20s. Like, this, like, that's not, you know, that's bad. So
there was a moment where I genuinely thought, because wasn't Chad down by like 2 before we even got to the main? And I was like, is this just going to be me and Zach after like half an hour?
Yeah, Chad's actually got a meeting, so I'm just trying to get him out. Yeah.
Well, we were originally like, oh, we'll play with like a bunch of people from 12 Sided. And we tried to get as many people as possible. And slowly everyone was like, oh, I've actually got work to do today.
Chad and I gave them too much work to do, and then they couldn't make it to the game that we set up. And they were like, well, we could not do that work and just go to the game. And I was like, it's okay.
don't worry about it.
That's what happened. Don't worry about it. No, I think what actually happened is we've been crazy busy this year, and then everyone was like, cool, I'm going on holiday as soon as reasonably possible.
That's so true.
Yeah.
And like everyone just left and went on holiday, and I was like, this is understandable. Like everyone deserves this.
Everyone had a very busy start to the year. But it was originally going to be, we were like, oh yeah, we'll get a bunch of us, and then like, it doesn't matter if we're gonna have everyone die. That it was like Chad down to 2 hip ones. We're like, we've got 3 people.
Well, I think that influences the story though, because like we couldn't be the badasses, right? Like we were just messing up so much that even if we had wanted to like, oh, we're the cool kids, the dice weren't there for us.
No, they really weren't.
And I think actually that's one of the reasons why I love the system. And I was going to give you a doggy treat, Chad, because you were actually the original, you actually came up with the original concept for the flashback mechanic in the first place, which I think brings a lot of like weight to the settlement and like backstories. And again, just like allows for a slightly more organic way of sharing some of that stuff. But also, I think one of the things I really love, and I think I have to give some doggy treat here to Edward Spence, because it was his idea for everything to only have 3 hit points, like everything to only have 3 hit points. And what I love about that is that the stakes can go from goofy to like really fucking serious so quickly. You know what I mean? Because you're like, oh, I'm fine, I'm at full health. And then literally like 30 seconds later, you're like, well, I could die right now. Like that's that could definitely be a problem.
As you know it has ended. Welcome to the Evopocalypse. No one knows what caused this catastrophic ecological disaster, but in its wake, humanity is on the brink of extinction, and planet Earth has never been more alive. You and your fellow players are survivors, venturing out from desperate settlements with limited tools and dwindling resources. You must survive highly evolved predators and warped colossal creatures, with no memory of the animals they once were. But there is still hope. Together, you will explore the world you once knew, using your finely honed survival skills and repurposed weapons, not to mention mysterious and unpredictable resurrection technology. Hunt down the source of this disaster, even as it hunts you back. Force of Extinction is a brand new TTRPG that makes you feel like the post-apocalyptic hero of your dreams. Or nightmares. Forceofextinction.com. Sign up to the backer kit today.
Well, actually, then I have another doggy treat which I thought of ahead of time, which was for you, Elle, because when you mentioned the tunnels, I was like, you know, and like it's just like it was just like a fish just like leapt out of water, landed on not just on the boat, but like landed on the plate and then like salted itself.
Yeah.
And I was like, dope, I will take that 100%. Because I was like, well, sick, we're in the middle of the desert, of course there's sandworms. There's nothing else that would have made those tunnels, so sandworms. That's going to be not great. And it paid off like so satisfyingly with like time restarting, you know, as you guys were in the tunnel, and then just the vision of the two of you just like running down the tunnel away from the sandworm, which was awesome.
It really was a Chekhov's sandworm. Like it was like, at some point.
Yes, that was literally what it felt like. Yeah,
in this session, the sandworm will go off.
Yeah, someone is going to be running away from this horrific little tube of nightmares. But I felt like there was a ton of really nice like examples of like using the abilities as well. But one of my other favorite moments was you, Chad, trying to take. I can't even remember the name of the NPC now. It was like the random guy that was like, who was sneaking around, and you were like, I'm determined to take him hostage. And it was like, and I was like, this is a horrible idea inside the system that we've created. Like inside of the system that we have created that Chad knows very well. I was like, this is a horrible idea.
Yep. That's why I did it.
And I was like, props to you. Props to you for doing it. Like absolutely props to you. Cause that was extremely funny.
Well, what actually happened was I realized that I had been given that multi-purpose tool and I hadn't used it yet. And I was like, okay, I'm going to use it. And then I was like, oh, this is a horrible idea, but it's totally what Sunder would do. Is like in this desperate situation, I'm down to one hit point. Let's try to make a move.
And I feel like, you know, there was like so many, like even just in the travel sequence, like that was, I genuinely was like, cool, they'll zip across the desert, it'll be fine. And then it was like 2 seconds later, Chad was being eaten by a Venus flytrap in the
sand. Yeah, it was immediate.
Just immediately biffed it so hard. It was hilarious.
Which then gave rise to the laxatives.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
My God. Yeah, I forgot about the laxatives. Yeah.
That's where we really started to go downhill, I think, in terms of the settlement.
You did get boosted by the laxatives. Like, the laxatives gave me a good opportunity to be like, right, okay, we fucked around enough in the desert. I'm getting you to where we need to be, like, in the story.
You said, okay, laxatives, that's it.
That's it.
We're not doing any more of this.
We're done now, okay? Everyone, it's serious. Serious gameplay from now on. Yeah. That's it. That's it. But no, it was super fun, and I feel like it was a nice opportunity for me to get to play. I've been playing a bit more consistently with the archetypes because that's been like that was like definitely a newer addition in the rules, and it's still something that we're like honing and refining. And so, you know, may even be different by the time that people get their hands on the final book. But it was you know, exciting and fun to see how those like rules and mechanics played out as well, especially like inside of the setting like Rotating Heroes, where I feel like it lends itself so well to these slightly heightened and ridiculous moments. It was quite fun actually to have that moment. But one of the things that, well, actually, first of all, I've done a lot of talking. Does anyone else have any doggy treats or PCFOCs that they would like to hand out to anyone else before I start talking about the story and little nuggets of lore that were hidden?
I was going to say, because this was my first time properly playing Force of Extinction, like obviously been getting to know the system from promoting it on social media and on Backer Kit and everything. By the way, it's on Backer Kit if anyone wants to follow.
Yeah. forceofextinction.com. Go right now.
Yes.
This is why you have marketing people. This is why, because they'll remember the things that you need to say and should have said at the beginning of the episode.
It's fine. We get it in somewhere. But yeah, there is something to be said about when we were doing the character creation, the settlement creation. And the bit that I had the most fun with was when you were like, you get to select a tool.
Mm.
And then basically when the world's your oyster, and the moment from choosing what your tool is going to be to then having to use it in the game and being like, okay, I may have chosen poorly here, but we're going to make it work.
Really stretching the believability of what the tool could feasibly do.
Yeah, but there is something that creatively allows you to then stretch that muscle while you're playing. That was so much fun.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, like 90% of Force of Extinction sessions boil down to, can I hit this thing with my tool? Like so many times, like no matter what the tool is, it's like, can I whack it and or, you know, fire my tool at it or use my tool to fire something else? So you're not alone.
Well, one session I ran at PAX East, the person was like, can I choose a nuclear bomb? And I said, sure, go ahead. So it was funny because they couldn't actually use their tool for the entire session until the end.
Yeah.
And it just became this like ticking thing that everyone would just constantly, there'd be a moment and then everyone would look over to this player. No. And then she wouldn't use it. But of course, the session ended when she decided to hit something with the nuclear bomb and it went off.
And the funniest thing you could have done then, Chad, was just to be like, nothing happens. This thing does not work. Like, there's a reason that it's unexploded. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't just hanging out there because it worked perfectly.
If you like the sound of a nuclear bomb in Force of Extinction, audience, you should check out the actual play that we did over on the 12-Sided Studios YouTube channel. Yeah. Just search 12-Sided Studios on YouTube and you'll find it, where our very own Jess Jewell has a ridiculous nuke. So that's fun.
Little Nico.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. That's flashbacks. That's crazy. We recorded that so long ago. I'd forgotten so much of what happened until I watched the first half of it the other day. Actually, it was weird. I actually walked into my living room and my wife was watching it. And I was like,
hey, maybe I should do that.
Yeah. I don't know what you mean. How dare you call me out like that, Zach? Oh, man. Any other doggy treats or PCFOCs? I'm trying to think if there's any other moments that jump out to me.
I want to give a doggy treat to, I guess, Chad and Jasper and by extension, Ed as well. I really like the system and how it feels simultaneously, like it has enough of a framework to like feel grounded in a rule set, but it is also so much, you're so able to like stretch your improvisational muscles and make something like silly and fun and ridiculous, but it always feels like it is like grounded by the rule set in such a way. I simultaneously feel very supported by the system, but also not tethered to it, which I think was super fun.
Yeah, and I think that's like, it's definitely an approach that I feel like we've taken to building the game, and I think it'll be the same as we continue to build the game and make it kind of even bigger, which is that, like, you know, some elements of this game like might be helpful, some elements might not be helpful. If they're not helpful, don't use them. Like, you know, just because it's like, I think that we never set out, and we will never, I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, Chad, set out to make any kind of a, you know, a competitive TTR. Like, I've always found it kind of odd that there's like really hard rules in D&D, you know, like really like firm, like this must be adhered to kind of, and you're like, but it's a game of imagination where like we win if our imagination wins. So like, weird that like you're saying no. Like, yeah. And I get that having a, like boundaries and stuff is really important because that's how you get good storytelling, you get failures, you get all those things. But in those like moments where you're like, well, objectively, the most narratively satisfying moment is this. Like, I always want the GM to have that kind of flexibility. And we've written a lot of that into the book. There's a lot of instances where we sort of like, you know, here's some suggestions for what we were thinking when we came up with the stuff, but also like, here's some other ways that you could take it. Here's some other ways you could adapt it for your world and you could, you know, make this impactful for you, because it's really about like, yeah, like you said, Zach, it's like, can we make a game that is simultaneously like enjoyable for a GM to run on a long-term basis, but also something they're not like sitting there like sweating bullets a half an hour before because they're like, I didn't prep enough. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like hopefully you'll like never have that experience with Force of Extinction, because it is just so easy to create narrative. You know, even it's just as simple as like, you need to go out and get some more fuel or some more provisions, you know, and then sort of start rolling on tables or drawing cards or whatever it may be to then like build out what those encounters look like. And you can just be a bit more reactionary as the GM, which I really appreciate. And I feel like every time I've run it.
The other thing that we've done is when there is a system behind something, like when we've used a strategy to build out the monster traits or the character archetype rank abilities, we try to expose that and say, here's what we've done so that you can create your own. So it's like,
yes,
giving you the ways that we've crafted the rank abilities. So then you can say, oh, I want to make a new archetype and here's how I make three rank abilities for it.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's also just, you know, I think, Chad, you said this today, it's also just not balanced. Like,
right, that's the other thing.
Which is super nice and super fun. Like, so if you want to make something that's utterly broken that is capable of killing your players within, like, 2 seconds, go for it. You know, because there is the mechanic for them to come back and, you know.
I was going to say, you've accounted for that in the rules. So, like, and that is the vibe of the game, right? Like, it's that kind of Godzilla monsters bigger than you that, like, if this were real, a single human being would have no hope in the world to face up against.
Yeah, literally none.
It's that is the feeling that you want the system to evoke, that this is broken, quote unquote, right?
Yeah. Well, I literally, the best example is one of the first ever encounters. As soon as we decided on, like, it was going to be roll under and we were going to try building a dice pool of D20s, one of the first encounters that Ed and I, like, ran for each other. We, like, did the same encounter twice to see how it would feel. And the idea was is that we were a group of survivors that were hauled up in a church. And then at one point, Godzilla and King Kong start fighting, like, above the church.
Yes.
And like, they have truly no interest in you whatsoever.
They do not care. Yeah.
Like, they do not give a shit. But they are, like, these two skyscraper-sized monsters, like, having at it. And in, like, every instance, like, one of us made it out, and it was so satisfying. It was like someone would get, like, rubble dropped on them and get trapped and stuck, and they were just like, screw it, take my finger, leave, you know, whatever. And then it was such a fun encounter, and it was, like, just the sheer kind of, like, scale of, like, actually playing out that movie sequence, right, that we've all kind of seen, where you go like, that's ridiculous that they survived, you're like, but it feels awesome when you're like in it and you're like, I don't know how the hell I'm still alive. Very actually similar to the end of this, right? Like, I have no idea how Lisan Al Ghaib suddenly showed up at the end and managed to like command a sandworm the fuck out of here. But I was like, but it, my feeling is that it, that moment only really feels as epic as it does, is if you've lost a ton of hit points by that point and you were, like, absolutely convinced you were going to die and you had rolled six nat 20s or whatever the hell it was and just constantly biffed it. Like, I feel like that moment was then, like, so much... Like, I, as a GM, felt empowered to kind of give you that moment, and it didn't feel, like, cheap or, like, just for a joke. It was kind of like, no, they get to have a cool moment, you know? Like, we'll see if it actually comes to anything, because they're also being chased by, like, a 60-foot semi-sentient, you know, like, machine monster. But... you know, go for it, dude. You wrote that sandworm. Plus, just like, anytime I get to reference Dune, I'll take it, because God damn it, I love that movie. Both of those movies.
So is all of Sim a desert?
No. There's actually not... the desert's actually relatively small. Sim is largely a jungle.
Why don't you tell us about the lore bits that were kind of sprinkled in?
I don't think this is a spoiler for anyone in the audience. And if anything, this is just a reward for being an attentive audience member listening to the Ark Bark, like a dutiful little rotator that you are. I will say, Zach is currently blowing you kisses, yeah, just in case we never put out the video version of this. But much of the story of this arc is kind of built around essentially like a version of what you guys experienced when going inside of this like strange temporal field. This won't be the last time that you see something like that, and it will have to like sort of varying degrees and consequences and things like that. I actually just recorded an episode 2 days ago, and oh shit, is all I can say. That's going to be pretty epic when you hear that. But the fact that the Turlets are involved in like looking for it, that is actually something that you'll only hear in this episode. There's no other like reference to that, which I'm excited for, and the introduction of the Bureau happens in this episode as well, which is really exciting because the Bureau, a little bit like a Axis's version of like the Illuminati, but they were a very legitimate company like a couple hundred years ago. Like they were like a very sort of big, just like, you know, very forward-facing company. Then stuff happened, who knows? And now they're kind of more considered a bit like, you know, a sort of shady organization that's sort of, you know, out doing various nefarious stuff.
Okay, hold on a second. So the initials of the Bureau.
Oh no, he's putting it together.
Are Barnabas.
Yes! This is funny because I feel like I really hope the audience picks up on this.
That's why during the episode when you were saying the name, I was like, that's a really long name. And I tried to capture all the words.
I think Elle said it, like said like Barnaby or something. And I was like, close.
But there was so much going on because I was so intrigued by this letter. But of course, Stasis Sandworm and the Skulls heading our way. And I was trying, that's why I kept asking during the game, could you just say that name again, please? Because I was trying to.
Could you say that one more time for me?
I was trying to write out the initials, you know what it's like when there's so many things going on at the same time. And I was like, I'm knowing Jasper, that is a reference to something, but we've got to book it out of here before something explodes. So I'm glad it did actually mean something, because...
Yeah. So for anyone who hasn't listened to the first season of Rotating Heroes, what are you doing? Go listen to it right now and then come back. But there was one of the big bad guys who was actually, in the end, we did a flashback episode where that said bad guy, who was called Barnabas, was actually played by the incredible Mark Meer, easily one of the coolest things that I've ever got to record, where I basically just got to tell Mark Meer, like, hey, we're not really even going to roll dice, just fucking be a bad dude. And he went off, like he absolutely went off, and it was so cool. So please go back and listen to that episode. But yes, the initials do spell out Barnabas. And for those who listen to the very end of the Amalur arc, there might even be, it's just the slightest suggestion of something. But, you know, anyone that's put that together, I'll leave that to the Reddits and the Discords. You can go and share your theories there. I couldn't possibly confirm or deny anything. But it felt kind of right for, even though this was like a side quest, essentially, to make sure that there was still something that, you know, drove our story forward and kind of, you know, was important. I kind of love the idea that there'll be people like, oh, I don't know the system. Maybe I haven't listened. And then suddenly the Discord's going to be like, holy shit, he said Barnabas. He said Barnabas. And everyone's going to have to go and listen to it. Because they're like, wait, what do you mean? Wait, we got actual canon? Like, what happened? Like,
everything's canon.
Everything is canon.
Yeah, well, that's a doggy treat to you, Jasper. Doggy treat to you, I think. And in some ways, that's all what Rotating Heroes is about, right? Like, yeah, we only have a few episodes for this sort of arc that we did. But that's the way the show works, is like things happen in these arcs that then propel other things happening in other arcs.
Yeah. And I think the balance, the fun thing, I think, is that, and what makes Rotating Heroes unique, is that it really gives the audience like agency, in the sense of like they know so much more than like the characters themselves. And I think that, like, for me personally, when I'm watching something, that's like one of the most heartbreaking like tropes, you know, like one of the most heartbreaking like kind of elements when I'm watching something and I'm like, don't go through the door now. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, because you know what's on the other side, right? But the character doesn't. And I just think that, like, you know, I think it's the same reason why everyone loves watching alien movies.
Yeah.
Even though it's like, so much of it is the same conceit of just like, hey, what's up, Chuck? Let's go investigate this weird space station that's broken down, you know? And you're like,
oh no, it's on my face.
Hey, dude, that thing fell off your face, but you seem fine. No!
Like, yeah. You know,
it's like, I think there's something really, really, and don't get wrong, like the inverse is often fun as well, where characters, you know stuff and you're kind of trying to catch up or piece things together. But that's just something I think that's quite unique for the way that we do things in Rotating Heroes, where, I mean, especially this arc, I won't sort of give away too many spoilers, but especially for this arc, I feel like there's going to be quite a lot of that sensation of like, get, you know, the audience really getting clued in on certain elements and getting kind of a peek behind the screen, essentially. And it'll be interesting to see if the audience, you know, pieces all together and, you know, maybe jump onto the Discord and try and give some of our rotators some hints, because I definitely feel like, you know, sometimes they're like, I feel like I should get this and I'm just not understanding it. I don't know what's going on. It's literally one of my the most terrifying things is like playing a high int character. It's just terrifying, man. Chad, you don't get that excuse, I'm afraid, because you are actually super intelligent, dude. So like, you don't get that excuse. I'm a thicky dum-dum and I'm trying to play a high-end character and I'm like, there's no universe I can understand this. Like, I get that you're giving me clues, but I if it's not an escape room...
How do I put them together?
You know what I mean? If it's not an escape room, my guy, I'm afraid I don't know. And I'm just going to have to roll int and see what happens.
I think that's tough when you're like, I think there's a tendency to do puzzles and stuff, and players will be like, I should just be able to roll to figure this out. I don't want to solve a puzzle. I don't want to play a game inside the game. I'm not smart enough to do that. Can I just roll?
Yeah, that was actually a really interesting. I think it might have been an interview with Brennan, maybe. And it was like such a light bulb moment for me. It might have even been Brennan and Matt like having a conversation. And Brennan was like, it's not fun watching your players get the clues. Sort of like get the answers. What's fun is watching them deal with the consequences. And I was like, and that completely changed my approach to like puzzle making within D&D, where it's like, so now what I tend to do with puzzles is it tends to be like, okay, you go into a room and it's very obvious what you have to do, but like the how you go about doing it and the consequences for doing it badly are then really entertaining and fun. But it's not like you walk into a room, figure it out, thickos, here's a handout. And like, again, like some people love that. Like some people absolutely love that. It's just, for me, I just really struggle. I'm always like sat there like shaking, like I don't fucking, I've done like two crosswords in my life.
I've gotten irate before when a GM has given me a riddle. I'm like, absolutely get fucked. I am not doing this riddle. Tell me what the answer is and let me play my little wizard.
Yeah. I remember so distinctly, a big shout out because I love them dearly to the Dark Dice crew who do like some truly incredible puzzles. But the way I am just sat there looking over my fellow players' shoulders, just being like, oh, so what are you doing over there? Oh, that's how you do it. Wouldn't have got there in a million years.
The trouble is, Travis and Caitlin are those high-end people.
So intelligent.
Yeah.
They're so intelligent. And they are like, and I'm like, great for you guys, but I am here to cast Eldritch Blast. Like, that is why I am here.
Yeah. I want to spam Eldritch Blast and that's it.
Yeah, literally that's it. It's so, it's so funny. Luckily, my character that I play on Dark Dice is like, he plays like a spiritual leader from a village. And this is like him, his is like the first time he's ever left that village. So I can be like, I don't know. I've never seen anything like this before. And they're like, it's a lantern. And I'm like, yeah, shut up.
Travis and Caitlin just being like, is Jasper okay?
Is Jasper okay? So stressed. So stressed because they've given me a Sudoku. And I'm like, no! My weakness!
The numbers!
I have 23 armor class, but this is the one that kills me.
Well, we know what we're getting Jasper for Christmas now.
A big book of Sudoku.
Oh, please don't get me a Sudoku book, please. It just won't do anything. It'll become a doorstop in the studio. Like, that's all that's going to happen if you get me a Sudoku book. I'm joking. I'd appreciate all and every gift that you guys would give me. It would mean everything. Thank you. But no, I think like that actually, it's funny though, because that has had such a profound effect on the way that I give lore out as well, right? Because like, even with like stuff like this, where I used to be like, oh, they have to roll a 19 to find the letter in the guy's bag. And then, like, and then there's a cipher on the bag. And the, but, you know, and then I was like, all that ends up happening is me and the players get frustrated because the players get frustrated trying to figure the thing out for ages. And then I get frustrated because they keep rolling like shit or just not figuring it out. And then I don't get to deliver the lore that I've spent literally months building. So I'm like, just give them the lore. And then they've got to deal with like, well, okay, great. Now you know that there's a fucking space lizard coming. That's nothing. I'm just making something up, by the way. But like, now you know a space lizard's coming. What are you going to do about it? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's like, it's not actually as helpful as you think to like know the secret, because it's like, well, you still got to like do something about it. Like, you know, go fight it or something. So yeah, That's changed a lot. And it was, and actually I think like it's similarly in this one where I was just like, hey, guess what, Pen? You just see this letter. You just get to read it. Like, here it is. It's fine. It's not a big, you know, he wasn't trying to be super secretive. He hangs around with a bunch of cool dudes with cool names. Half of them can't read. There you go. A bit more Skulls lore for you.
They can't read.
Can't read. But there was something very intriguing about the way you sort of presented it, because it was like, oh, he's cramming it into his jacket, which immediately, as both a player and someone who needs to know, cannot do with. Seriously, never try and like do a surprise party for me, because in the months leading up to it, I'll be like, what are you doing? What's going on?
But investigative journalist like Elcrook.
Yeah, no, cannot. I need to know.
Can I share a story about you, Elle, when we hung out recently? Am I allowed to share that on the Arc Bar?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was because it's truly like a core memory for me. We went to a wonderful show called Key of Dreams, and it's this like, how do you describe it? It's like a part theater, part like a kind of improv show where like you are get to like influence the stories by figuring out puzzles. Speaking of puzzles, oh my God.
Yeah.
I nearly went damn crazy. I was just trying to get into a lock and it wasn't working. Anyway, that's a different story. The story that I have to tell is that towards the end of the night, this like eldritch god had been summoned. So we've got this like incredible actor in front of us who has got like black contacts in, and they're like hair's all fucked up, and they're like doing this thing, and they're like, and I'm like, oh my, and it's like, it's kind of objectively terrifying, right? And I'm at the end of this hall and I'm kind of stuck. Like, me and my wife are like stuck at one end of the room. Like, we can't literally move from where we are because it's like eldritch god is like blocking our path. And we're like, oh my God, maybe we're going to die. Ah, this is crazy. And then there's these like big double doors at the end of the other end of the room. And I kind of hear before I see, just like, doof, 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 like this. And Elle, just like knees up, is sprinting across this door. And then like 2 minutes later, doof, 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 sprinting back the other way. So when Elle says, incredibly committed to finding out all of the secrets, I can promise you I've seen it firsthand, because it was utterly incredible to see your dedication in that moment. Because I think you ran back with like a Bible or something.
Sprinting with a Bible is hilarious to me.
So funny. Whilst your boss is being attacked by an eldritch god, thanks for your help, by the way.
Hey, we were busy stopping spiders from joining the eldritch god in the other half of the manor house, okay?
Appreciate that.
But yeah, no, there was something to be said about giving the lore information, but like making the players intrigued to want to get the lore information. Like in that instance, you didn't just hand it to us. You were like, oh, he's squirreling away this letter. And instantly it was like, gonna get that letter.
I gotta get that letter. Yeah.
Gotta get it if I do nothing else.
That letter suddenly seems fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It's like catnip for players, right?
Oh, 100%. So yeah, like props to you for like the intrigue level. And even when you like said with like puzzles and stuff like that, there was even down to the moment where we'd read the letter and you basically gave us a countdown to make a decision about whether the bomb that Zach was about to set off was actually going to, if we were actually going to allow it to set off. And it was really nice how you sort of leveled out the, I'm going to give you a second to make this decision, and sort of looking at you being like, make the right decision, otherwise this is all going to go and no one's making it out alive. But also allowing enough tension to sort of raise where it was like, I'm not giving you a countdown, but there is a countdown. Eventually I will cut you off.
It's something that I've really enjoyed and something I think I've got a lot better at, even like quite recently, is like the sort of timings and payoffs of certain things. So like, in that moment, I was like, oh, it's really fun if we set up this dynamic that, like, you know, this, like, this bomb is now on the thing, kind of like Chekhov's bomb, right? It's, like, on the side of this thing. It's clearly, like, a bad idea. Penn's put that together. Amazing. Penn's jumped in, stopped it. But, of course, like, Chad's rolled another nat 20. Like, you know, and so I just felt this moment of, like, yes, we finally did it. Everyone's safe. Chad's safe. Great. Yes. Awesome. And then it's suddenly just, like, this like baton, you know, being launched across the battlefield, landing perfectly on the bomb, exploding. It was like, ah, yeah, that was of course the logical, you know, the logical next step. I always think of it as Rotating Heroes. I always have something of the, have you ever watched the Transporter movie series? Do you know that one?
No.
Man, it is ludicrous. At one point, I want to say it's Jason Statham, but I don't think it is. I think it's just like,
yeah, that I was going to say, is this the Statham one?
I think it's just a Jason Statham type.
No, I think it is.
Is him?
Yeah. Yeah, it is absolutely Jason Statham.
Oh, it is. Okay, it is. Yeah. It is the full Statham. Okay. But yeah, like at one point, he has a bomb on the underside of his car. And if this doesn't sound like the most Rotating Heroes thing ever, he drives the car off of a, I think he like shoots something, like a plank of wood, so it kind of falls at a certain angle, like out of the window. And then he drives his car up the plank of wood so it rotates as a perfect 360 rotation in the air. And there's a crane with like one, you know, like the big crane like hook thing is hanging down. And he basically like perfectly does a flip so that the underside of the crane knocks the bomb off of the underside of the car. And then the car continues to rotate and lands. And I'm like, my guy, that was pretty cool. You rolled like 6 nat 20s in a row, but fair enough. Like absolutely fair enough. Or I guess in 4/6 ancient parlance, you rolled like 6 nat 1s in a row. But yeah, now the trying to figure out how to balance some of the insane shit that we do with actual story will forever be my struggle with rotating heroes, but it's a cross that I'm willing to bear. Absolutely.
So the thing that came out of the desert, the big machine,
yeah,
does that factor into what's happening in the other arcs?
It certainly does.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So I think this is like an episode worth like a re-listen. You know what I mean? Like I think it's like there's like more in there. There's like some things that I'm even like don't want to reference, you know, again, you know, like Lizan al-Ghaib, you know. Like that is canon now.
Lizan al-Ghaib exists in
yes.
Axis.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, fully exists. Wait until you find out what happens in the third book, everyone. This is one of my favorite things that's happening at the moment. Every single person I speak to who's not read the Dune books, but is like really into the movies, I'm like, so what do you think for the third film? And they're like, I don't know. It just kind of feels like, you know, Paul's got what he wanted. And I'm like, okay.
He's going to be bad.
Okay. And everyone's like, yeah, I think nothing bad's going to happen, right? And I'm like, mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. This is not at all about rotating heroes. I really need to intercede about Dune right now. I have not read the Dune books. I love those first two Dune films. I, as someone who has fucking literacy of narrative, is like, well, obviously it's gonna go bad. He sees the genocide in the second one. He's like, if I do this, everyone's gonna die, but I'm gonna do it anyways. You guys gotta read into the narrative. Come on. Come on.
But the problem is that people see a cute little French boy and they're like, nothing bad could happen. Look at him. He's so sweet. And I'm like, okay, first of all, look at this guy when he's not on a film set. He's a gremlin. Like, this guy has got full gremlin energy. But yeah, it's funny. I enjoy having those conversations. I'm like, I think you might want to rewatch those films real quick. Just give them a little rewatch. Like anyone who came out of season one being like, I think there's a redemption arc for Homelander.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
In what universe?
People were saying that up to the end.
I think you should see a psychiatrist, I think, actually, is what, you know what I mean? If you think that that's, if redemption is on the cards for that man, I think you need help. yes. Well, I don't know if I have any PCFOCs for this one. Probably that I didn't kill any of you, actually.
Yeah, I would have loved to have had one of us die.
That's my PCFOC. I could have done, I think, a few different points. I was probably a little generous. But, you know, I also kind of like, I love the characters and I was like, I didn't want to completely close the door to them potentially coming back because there isn't the same resurrection mechanic.
Right.
That's true.
In Axis. I was like, I'm not going to throw that around willy-nilly. So for anyone that's listening, I think I mentioned this in the episode, but for anyone that's listening, in Force Extinction, resurrection is a very big part. And actually it's like, it's kind of funny because resurrection, it's kind of ironic, which is that like resurrection is probably one of my least favorite things about D&D. Like, I hate Revivify and normally always ban it as a spell. Because I'm like, it's too cheap and it completely undermines the stakes. Like, at a minimum, you need to, like, go down through the 7 hells to bring someone back to life. Like, a minimum, you know what I mean? Like, it needs to be a fucking slog and they need to roll up a new character and be that character for, like, 20 episodes, right? Like, we're not doing a, like, yeah, you just get to vibes. I have to give away my mom's diamond. Can't, give me a break. Like, give me a break. So anyway, in Force of Extinction, though, it's, like, super easy to come back. You just, like, pop a little finger in a microwave and you just grow a new body. But I was like, I'm not going to introduce that to rotating heroes.
There can be complications, though.
Yes, there definitely can be.
And the more you do it, the more likely that there's complications.
Yes.
Can I ask, just from a design perspective, obviously this is not to do with how we played it, but like, what was the decision behind making the resurrection mechanics that way as game designers? I'm really curious.
I think it was that we really genuinely wanted to make something that felt actively dangerous. And we'd come up with that and the adrenaline die at the same time, which is the idea that, like, as your party falls, you're getting stronger and, like, it increases your odds of getting out of there significantly. And I genuinely think that, like, again, you can attest to this, Chad, but, like, in the games that I've played, having characters die is really helpful.
Yeah.
Because it essentially concentrates your roles into, like, that one person. Because every time you die, you get an adrenaline die. Like, everyone else in your party gets an adrenaline die. So if you're a party of five and three people have died, you get three adrenaline die. Like, you get, like, so your dice pool is at, like, a four, probably a five, just, like, off of the bat. Which means that if you're running away from a big monster or something like that, like, your odds of survival are, like, so much higher than they were previously. So it feels like even though they're dead, like, they've had some impact on the story and the narrative. And I think we honestly just kind of got obsessed with the idea of, like, you know, it being a game mechanic where it's like, well, fuck it, I don't need to get back. Chops off my finger, gives it to you. I'm going to run off that way. Just book it. You know what I mean? Like,
strap the nuke to your chest, run into...
Right.
Yeah, exactly, and run and do the thing. Like, it was like, it really... But there's something kind of funny about, you know, you then getting back and be like, oh, can you pop Jeff in the microwave? You know, ding, Jeff walks out naked, like... Hey, we did it! Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I think it just kind of lent it very much to, like, the tone and style of the game and the way that people could play it, where, like, they really could kind of play with those stakes a little bit. And my favorite thing is, and I did this quite a lot, especially in one shots, is, like, they get back and I'm like, well, you did spend all of your power, so your resurrection machine is broken. And they're like, oh, no! It's like, yeah, and then you only have, like, 24 hours to get that finger, like, either on ice
right. Or
in a microwave, or they're dead. So it's like, even in a world where it is that sort of flexible and easy or whatever, it's still post-apocalypse, it's still super dangerous, it's very easy for a GM to, like, bring big, big consequences
and
really punish people for fucking around, which is, as you know, is my favorite thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
Truly, my favorite thing to do. Mm-hmm. I can say this, actually, I just GM'd a one shot of this for the Roll from the Hip guys, and that'll be over on their YouTube. You should go and check it out. I took a note of everything they said during character creation and settlement creation. Everything. Down to, they joked about 40 people in their settlement getting killed by zombie hipsters. Canon. They joked about there being, what was it, babies that they were using as batteries or something.
Oh, baby batteries.
Baby batteries.
Huh?
Yeah, like that, like, don't worry, it was just batteries with little faces drawn on them. They were all going kind of crazy.
Wearing nappies, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Any which way that I can find to punish my players, I would, and I did. And Force of Extinction, perfect for that. So perfect for it.
Which, actually, speaking of that, highly recommend going to watch that thing, because that actually showcases the death mechanic and how, as you were just describing, how that then affects the rest of the party, because something happens without spoiling anything. And I think it was because of that that the rest of the party and the people that they were attempting to save, it was the only reason that they got out of the situation that they ended up getting out of, because of that mechanic. Otherwise, I think it would have been a TPK otherwise.
Yeah. 100% it would have been a TPK. And I think it kind of, like, informed the decisions of the party, because they knew that that mechanic was there and was in place. And it just leads to some fun, like, narrative choices, which I really enjoyed. But anyway, all that is left for me to say is a huge thank you once again to my wonderful players, Chad Pytel, Zachary Fortis-Com, and Elle Crook. Thank you so much for doing this. It was I had such a blast. I hope that you at home have been and have enjoyed learning, listening to all about Force of Extinction. This is a game that we're all incredibly proud of and have been working so much to get this out to all of you, and I hope that you enjoy it. So if you did enjoy this and you do want to go and check out the backer kit, forceofextinction.com. If you're listening to this and the backer kit is live, then obviously go and check out some of the awesome tiers we have. You can get yourself a tactical backpack, which is just so freaking dope. I can't wait to get one. We have special edition covers, like super limited edition covers, because we won't be reprinting that special edition at any point. There's a GM screen. There's Force of Extinction dice. And there's even, if you think this sounded like fun and you're like, wait, I want a bit of that, you can even, there's one tier where you can do an online session with either myself, Edward Spence, or Connie from Transplanar. Or if you really want to, we can play in person together. Because me, Edward Spence, are going to be running a like holiday sort of, what are we calling it? Extravaganza? I think you call it some escape. That was it. I was like, what's the very basic word that Chad used?
We were trying to come up with some survival kind of thing. I think escape does it.
Holiday escape is perfect. But yeah, you can come and do a holiday escape with me and Ed, and we'll be running sessions of Force of Extinction and having a great time. And most of these guys will probably be there, so you get to hang out with these guys too, which will be an absolute blast. So go check out the tiers. But if the Back Again is not live, if you're listening to this right now and it's like maybe moments away from launching, then you can follow. And if you pay $2, you can also reserve your spot on the backer kit, which gets you a free Force of Extinction dice when you back at any level, which is very exciting.
Any physical level. Physical.
Any physical level. Thank you so much. Not the digital copy of the game. But I think I covered everything.
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah. I think you got it.
Wow, look at me go. Look at me go. I'm learning, everyone. So all that is left to say is please go check out forceofextinction.com, and for everyone else, we'll see you next week. Yippee-yi-yo!
Yippee-yi-yo!
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.